If you think we're on the run.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the Dad's Army podcast. It's been a month since Oliver and I sat down and discussed some serious Dad's Army, and quite frankly, I'm getting quite irritated and I'm getting itchy because I haven't been able to talk about Dad's Army as much as I'd like. So, welcome back to the show.
Hello, my friend. Yeah, I'm feeling exactly the same. I need a good Dad's Army vent. we've not been here. We've been missing the mic. It's been busy. Real life's, you know, work's been in the way, but now we're back on Wilmington on Sea territory, and it feels good.
It does, I have to say. I always look forward to my little departure from what's technically known as the real world.
Yeah.
And just to go and discuss things that, yeah, you know, I know everything's presented in a nice, rosy fashion, but as we'll be discussing later on when we talk about the episode that we're going to be discussing, sometimes it's really good to laugh in the face of adversity. And I think A Man of Action shows that really, really well. So I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that particular episode.
Particularly as it's sort of been running parallel with a few events that have been happening in the news in this country recently. It's hit home. James and I met up for a coffee at a well-known chain. And we thought this episode would be quite a poignant one to discuss.
Before we get stuck into that, however, we've got a little piece of news.
Does that mean we get to go to the newsroom?
It does, yes.
Here is the news, and this is John Snagg reading it.
Thank you, Mr. Snagg. And in case any of you wonder where that particular insert comes from, it's from the radio plays. John Snagg gave an introduction to every episode of the Dad's Army radio show. That's where that insert comes from.
Well, fantastic. Well, I mean, what's the main news headline this month?
Well, the main news headline, I'm not quite sure whether this qualifies as huge news, but it's certainly something that I wanted to discuss. Now, those of you listening to the podcast are probably aware that Arnold Ridley, not only was he very successful and came to fame as Private Godfrey, but he was also a playwright. And he had several plays performed on the London circuit, the most famous of which is The Ghost Train, which I have to say right at the beginning of this piece, I've never seen.
No, I've never seen it. I've only seen snippets because it's a very famous play. But yeah, maybe we should go and see it. What we need is for The Ghost Train to be back on stage.
It's funny you should say that because it's been back on stage and now it's gone off again, which is the reason why we're talking about it. And it was actually only a weekend, and the reason why is because it was being performed at a railway station. It was at Brockford Railway Station, which I have to say I'm not entirely certain where it is, but the Tidy Theatre Company transformed the station into an open-air stage, and it was for their very first production as well. They hadn't actually produced any other performance in the past. And yeah, it sounds absolutely fantastic. I wonder how it went, because I haven't seen any reports, despite me trying to find them on the internet. But yes, they turned this particular station into a theatre for the night, possibly in similar vein to the Railway Children at London Waterloo at the moment. They're using the former Eurostar platforms as a theatre there. Of course, I have a particular interest in Arnold Ridley since I read his son's book called Godfrey's Ghost.
Of which you can hear more about on an earlier podcast.
Thank you, Oliver. That was nicely inserted there. We've also received some feedback about that particular episode.
Have we really?
We have indeed. So everything's coming together nicely,
yes.
With the exception of the way this show has been presented. Episode 40 of the Dad's Army podcast, Nicholas Ridley joined me to discuss a book that he'd written all about the relationship he had with his father. And we've had an email from Peter Whitlaw, all the way from Perth in Australia, who's recently listened. And he says, I'm currently re-listening to your earlier podcasts and decided to write to you to thank you and Oliver. I'm particularly impressed with the Nicholas Ridley interview. Nicholas told it as it was, and you asked emotive, insightful questions. Yeah, I really enjoyed doing that interview. It was fascinating. It was more fascinating than I expected it to be, listening to someone who knew someone who starred in Dad's Army. And I mean, Nicholas wasn't around a lot of the time when Arnold was acting, but he certainly saw the impact it had on family life, you know, both the good and the bad.
And let's not forget, it's a very well written book. It's got a different kind. It's not your standard narrative of a biography. And it's perhaps, certainly from my point of view, wasn't, I didn't, I mean, obviously it was about Arnold Ridley. I think people make that silly assumption that Arnold Ridley was Private Godfrey. Of course, he wasn't, which is exactly what this book goes out and says. It's in our target for this year to do a commentary on Branded, due to popular demand, and it's also one of your favourite episodes, isn't it, James?
Yeah, it is. It's one of the most insightful, I think, episodes into nuances concerning the war. And whenever you get a story told within the backdrop of a very realistic wartime setting, and you look at the issue of conscientious objection, then it's really, really fascinating. And I think this one is particularly good because you've got a fairly straight story. It's not overtly comedic. So it's a really, really good episode. But yes, I've gone off on one about Branded, which is nice and easy to do. I thoroughly enjoy doing that. But yeah, thank you, Peter, for your email. I hope you enjoy working your way through the remainder of our back catalogue.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, we've just got a letter here from a few episodes ago, from Debbie Rogers. Hi, James and Oliver. Firstly, well done for producing an excellent podcast. Most enjoyable. Well, thank you very much, Debbie. On to my main point. I've just got around to listening to episode 62, The Menace from a Deep Commentary. Superb, as always. This was with James and Tony. You referred at one point to the shots of the floating mine and questioned whether this was stock footage or filmed specifically for the show. My father reliably informs me that shots of the mine are from the film Heroes of the Telemark. I hope this tidbit of information satisfies your curiosity. Well, thank you very much, Debbie. It would be very interesting to check out that film, see if the shots match up.
Mm.
Probably a stock shot has been used countless times any time that a mine has appeared on television. Anyways, thanks for the podcast, and I look forward to hearing episode 63. Regards, Debbie Rogers. Well, thank you very much, Debbie.
Yeah, very interesting, and it's something that's always jumped out at me whenever I've watched Menace from the Deep, because there is a slight jarring effect, and I think it's because I'm watching episodes of Dad's Army these days on a widescreen television. Normally, the studio scenes fit far better. I don't know whether they do something to the DVD, but it kind of fits the screen better.
Mm.
And the stock footage clearly seems to be in a different aspect. So it seems stretched.
Yes.
I don't know whether or not there would have been a jarring sensation for people watching it when it was broadcast back in the 70s. But certainly there is now. You watch it on DVD. And that's what made me think, I don't think that was filmed specially. But a little bit later, you do get a scene of the mine chasing Hodges in the same shot in the sea. So you think, well, there's clearly something there, because there's no way they superimposed Hodges swimming in the sea. It's too good a shot.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Maybe close up. Maybe it was such a lightweight model, it didn't look like it could do any damage. So they thought, well, we'll throw in some stockier of the real thing. We'll have to ask Bill Pertwee sometime.
Yes, indeed. Was that a real mine that you were being chased by?
This is Frank Williams, and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.
Where have you been? Don't you know there's an emergency on?
How dare you hold a meeting in my office without my permission?
This happens to be my office, Captain Manry.
It also happens to be my office.
And it also happens to be my office, and I'm holding an emergency meeting.
Emergency? What emergency?
What do you mean to say you haven't heard? Oh, you know Inspector Baker and Fire Officer Dale.
Yes. How awfully nice to see you. It was fun last night, wasn't it? You know, Connie wears awfully well, doesn't she?
Just a fine Connie. Oh. What's happening here?
What's happened? A landmine has landed on the railway line.
What?
Just outside the town.
Fortunately, nobody was seriously hurt, but it's destroyed over 100 yards of railway track.
And the town's gas and water supplies have been cut off.
Yes. And if those Jerry planes drop any firebombs, we've had it.
This is serious. I'm getting onto GHQ.
Look, the telephone lines are down as well. That's no good.
I've just heard the news. No gas, no water, no telephones. The town's cut off. We're marooned. Marooned. What are we going to do?
All right, Mr. Town Clerk. No need to get into a panic.
I'm not in a panic. But
something's going on.
Okay, on to our featured episode discussion for this podcast, A Man of Action, which was episode 2 in series 7.
Which BBC iPlayer have incorrectly labelled as series 8, you might notice. We'll have to notify the BBC that their current iPlayer information has all of Dad's Army series incorrectly labelled.
Wow.
So that's a little bit of something that this particular podcaster noticed yesterday when looking up this episode. But originally it was transmitted on Friday the 22nd of November 1974. Yeah. And yeah, we decided to talk about this episode, but because of the recent riots that happened in this country, notably in London, which brought our minds back to when there was talk of looters in this episode. So similarly with our discussion on Mum's Army, we thought we'd chat in depth about, we'll break down the episode for you.
It's an interesting episode. I think it's one of those that the story isn't particularly serious, whereas the actual setting, if you were to describe it, as I will do so in a moment, is actually incredibly serious. So if that makes any kind of sense, there's a nice little contradiction there with the way it's played compared to the situation that it's set in. Yes, war is a serious setting under any circumstances, but the story involves lack of utilities, no power, no heat, no light, and how the characters and how Warmington copes with that. And it does it in a comedic light way, but it does it really, really well.
I agree entirely. I think the best episodes of Dad's Army of Ones are littered with reality. Mum's Army, as we discussed last time, it felt a very real episode, I mean, A, because of the performances, but B, it was the relatability between the fact that during the wartime people did have affairs and they did meet other people. The Deadly Attachment features Germans, you know, again, it has elements of the war that everyone can relate to. And I prefer episodes like that actually link in things that actually were happening, as opposed to some random running around Stanford battlegrounds or just running around or doing a platoon exercise. You know, it's all very well and good of talking into string. That isn't where my favourite kind of comedy is in Dad's Army. I like this episode because it's almost, you could buy this as a film, I think. I mean, I know it's ridiculous that he's got his head caught in a gate, but the whole setting that they're out there and the planes are overhead and the sirens are going, it's got quite a filmic quality, this. And even though we don't ever see the looters or the rioting, it's all inferred to. You can totally believe it. And, you know, Mannering's declaring martial law. And you've got the police in there and you've got the town clerk. They're all sort of thinking, oh, he's gone mad, you know. I like the sense of urgency in this episode. I think translates rather well. And it calls into question whether you think Mannering's right or wrong. It's a weird one because the platoon are all behind him at first and quite enthusiastic about supporting him. Even Fraser at first, but then of course it becomes the norm where they're like, well, not your Mannering's gone mad.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, you've got 2 points there. I think the first one is the way that the story is told, and I think there are a lot of very silly scenes within Dad's Army, like the string in Uninvited Guest, for instance. Yeah, that is a fairly light little scene, whereas, I mean, it doesn't really come across as believable in the context of the story. Mm. Whereas the silliness in A Man of Action, despite it being set in very, very grave situation, does work, even though they do treat the comedy in a similarly flimsy way, if you know what I mean, a whimsical way.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Mr. Mannering, permission to speak, sir?
Jones, is that you? What are you doing on the telephone? Get off at once, I'm having my photograph taken.
Something wrong, Captain Mignore?
No. It's just one of my patrols phoning in. The whole thing works like a smooth, well-oiled machine, you know. Jones, by the way, while you're on, you better give me your report.
Mr. Mannering, young Pike, he's got his head caught in the park gates.
I see.
What do you mean? Did you hear me, sir? Private Pike's got his head caught in the park gates.
Good, excellent.
Good? What's good about it? I don't understand. What shall I do, Mr. Mannering?
Well, can't you remove the obstacle?
Well, I've tried pulling you, Caesar, but it's his ears. They're in the way, sir.
Are you sure there's nothing wrong, Captain?
No, nothing wrong at all, no. Just one of my patrols got hung up, that's all. Something is exposed which shouldn't be exposed.
So I think that's demonstrated through a number of different scenes, and we'll talk about that. I mean, the whole fact of Pike getting his head stuck in the park gate is ridiculous. It's funny. I think it's quite funny.
Yeah.
But the seriousness, again, I mean, there clearly isn't supposed to be any rioting or looting within Warmington, but the comedy lies within Manor in thinking there might be. Okay, and he doesn't really believe it, to be fair. He just thinks this is a way to grab power. Having said that, because all the communications were cut off, because there was no power, heat, light, etc., I think Mandarin was absolutely justified in the actions that he took. He was completely correct. And his actions, despite his platoon rebelling against him towards the end, were almost vindicated by the captain coming in at the end, basically to do exactly what Mannerin had done already. And this guy was regular army. So, and he was actually quite pleased with Mannerin. I think he said, all I have to do is take over from you then, because you've done everything that I was going to do anyway. So despite him raiding against his platoon at various points, and indeed the fire brigade, the vicar, the unholy trinity, police, essentially, he was absolutely correct. And I think everyone saying you're going too far actually undermined the seriousness of the situation. They didn't appreciate how difficult it could have been had that power, heat, etc., not been restored.
I think for me, the standout thing of this episode and why it works is Mr. Telfern Thomas as Private Cheeseman. I think him coming in here, obviously we've established him before, but the fact that Mannering really doesn't want him to see the fact that Pike has his head stuck in a gate, I think that's what makes that funny. I mean, the fact that he's got his head in a gate, you know, that's a bit daft. The fact that he's got this reporter in his midst and he desperately doesn't want him to see it.
What on earth's going on in the office?
Yes, indeed. Thank goodness you got Captain Mainwaring. Hello, who's this then?
It's Private Pike.
Oh, hello, how are you?
Hello, nice to meet you.
Yes, indeed. What's he doing with his head stuck through the gate?
It's highly secret.
Ah, well, you can tell me.
No, I can't. I haven't sworn you in yet.
Well, swear me in now, then.
No, there's no time for that now. Now, look here, what's going on in there?
Ah, well, the chief warden is holding an emergency meeting, you see.
And then at one stage, someone says, look how he treats his men, you know. Those little gags, I like those. They unfold gradually throughout an episode, you know, a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I think Thomas or Cheeseman in this episode serves as a way to highlight the lunacy, because clearly he's an outsider. Pike getting his head stuck in the park gates is not actually something that you'd be surprised at normally. But you just go, that's Pike. Whereas you've got someone here, the platoon suddenly realise this isn't normal behaviour, this wouldn't normally happen, and you can see it visibly through Mannerin's reluctance to inform Cheeseman of what's actually going on. It's actually Thomas's second appearance in Dad's Army as this character.
After the American one.
Can you remember?
Can I remember the name of the episode? Called? It's called...
Are you nearly there? It's My British Buddy.
Yeah. And I think it's his best episode, actually. I think he's used... I think after this, Telfern Thomas is wasted. I don't think they knew what to do with him. In his first two episodes, they use him as a device for comedy. It works. After that, he just gets the odd line if he's lucky, you know, in the remainder of his series. I mean, he gets the WC war correspondent in his next one. I think it's very one of his only gags after that. Or Captain Mannering, what happened to the Welsh soldier? When he's talking the story, you know. But that's not enough to keep a character going, or an actor of his caliber, to be honest. But I think in this episode, man of action. Well, he gets the Captain Mannering, man of action, isn't he? I think it's a very good, very good, very good episode.
Really. I think the character works in this story, certainly, and I think he works in My British Buddy as well. After that, I think you're right. I think the writers don't really know what to do with him, and that might have been because of the dynamic on set, because I think people saw him as a replacement for James Beck, which must have been extremely difficult for all concerned, especially given that he wasn't supposed to be a replacement.
No, he was
a character in his own right. And I feel that he probably got a bit of a bum deal too. But this episode works on a number of levels, I think. And depending on what parts of Dad's Army you like the most, I think the episode will divide opinion. If you like Dad's Army, straight, serious, all of those parts, and clearly there's only a number of episodes that you're really going to grab onto. If you like Dad's Army at its most silly, all of the things that I genuinely don't like about Jones, then I think you've got a number of episodes for you as well. And the remainder kind of fit in the middle. And I think this episode veers towards the comedic and the silly episodes. It just about retains my interest, because it does offer some very, very serious wartime issues, especially in terms of the air raid. Whenever I hear that air raid siren, I always think, God, what would it have been like? Even if it's the most ridiculous scene possible, like with his head stuck through the gates. But you're looking at, imagine that for a second, if you can. You're outside somewhere, you can't move because you're trapped, or perhaps maybe you've got responsibilities that doesn't let you shelter, and you can hear bombs, really loud explosions. Now, some of us will remember what it was like in times in London when the IRA were active. And every now and again, you would hear a massive crash. I heard the Canary Wharf bomb go off. Wonder what the hell it was. It's a scary thing. Now imagine that, week in, week out, year in, year out. Yes, you might become anaesthetised to it, but you're always going to be aware of someone who's lost a house or has a relative or a friend killed. You know, and that's going to become everyday life. And now you compare the reaction from the residents of Walmington-on-Sea, and even the reaction of the platoon, to the reaction that you saw in London when the riots broke out.
Mm.
Now, you look at the way the community simply did not function. It didn't pull together in those riots. And you consider the hardship compared to the hardship that we've just explained or I've just gone through in a wartime scenario. And the only thing that's separating those two scenarios is about 50 years. Now, I find that really quite sad.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least in Warmington-on-Sea, they all looked like they stuck together. I mean, I was actually in Clapham on the night of these London riots, and I left Clapham train station having been directed out of a different exit with no explanation as to why being directed to a different part of a station. And then walking down the high street, passing six police officers, none of whom said a word. I mean, suddenly this building catches fire right in front of me. It was armed police yelling, "Get out of a building, get out of a building." And rioters throwing things at the man at the building, you know. And I walked past these six officers who just let me walk into this war zone. I can't imagine the Home Guard allowing that to happen. You know, they'd have at least cordoned off the area. But they weren't even doing anything to help, you know, just standing and watching. And to me, they looked scared and frightened, because it was a very frightening, it was like a movie set, it didn't seem real. But absolutely, as James says, imagine that every single day for 5 years, 6 years, you know. It is scary. I think that's why this episode, whilst it's comedy, it does have that grounding of reality, which I think helps make it work and doesn't seem as far-fetched as some of the other episodes, you know, just a bit silly. I think this is one of the better ones of the last few series, to be honest. Everyone's on good form. You know, Jonesy suggesting to cut off Pike's ears, you know, that's pretty funny. Don't be ridiculous, Jones. And it's got what I've referenced in other podcasts, which sort of developed in the last few series, that wonderful sort of Jones and Pike relationship, where a few episodes had those sort of dual, you know, double scenes where they were talking. And this one starts with one of those lovely scenes.
Probably one of the first, because those scenes only really materialised on a reasonably regular basis after Walker dropped out of the series. And I think this is a kind of experimental episode, in as much as they try to have a number of scenes with just two characters in them. And a little later on, you've got Godfrey with Pike as well, when they have a discussion about the practicalities of being stuck in a park gate for a prolonged period, let's say. And of course, Godfrey can empathise with that very, very clearly. And I just like the way that the dialogue goes between the characters very, very free and easily. Jones does get some serious lines. At the opening you referred to a moment ago, they talk about food. And again, food is something which Jones is quite keen on, I think, because he has these conversations on a number of episodes about the availability of food. And this one, they were talking about pears, bananas, blancmange, chocolate cream, all of that kind of stuff in the opening 5 minutes. And once again, a very silly piece of dialogue, really, about bananas being mashed up with cream and squashing them through the teeth, because of the context where bananas weren't really available, you know. They weren't available on the market, you know. Makes you realise what hardship really is. And whereas hardship, for instance, in London a few months ago, was defined as not having the right kind of trainers or the right kind of television, therefore we'll go and take them. And you just can't equate, or at least I can't in my mind, equate that kind of wartime spirit. And I'm not saying it was all warm and cozy and everybody loved each other and you cuddled each other every day, you know. It was just a sense of working together, whereas that no longer seems to exist. And I think this is one of the reasons why I watched Dad's Army. I haven't actually seen or noticed such a immediate comparison with a response to hardship as clearly as the writing has showed us. And not only that, Mannerin says looters are going to be shot. He doesn't talk about water cannon or giving them a smack over the wrist or you're very, very naughty, off you go and don't do it again. In a wartime scenario, looters could have been shot under martial law. Yes, it's said in a comedic line, but it's perfectly valid. It would have happened, could have happened.
This town is now under martial law. All looters will be shot on sight.
As town clerk,
I love how Mannering is made out to be some kind of tyrant by certain members of the town clerk. Goes nuts. One of Mr. Longworth's finest hours, I think. I can't remember who it is who describes him as a dictator of some South American banana republic. There's a lot of fear around Mannering in this episode, and it's one of my favourite moments of Mannering as a whole. Is when Hodges said, "Well, you know, what makes you in charge?" And Mannering just, like John Wayne, just tosses his gun on the table. And I love the fact that, like, you know, even though it's like just so casual, no one leaps with a gun. You know, no one dares, because I always love the idea of anyone having done that, Mannering quick drawing, picking it up, like, you know, spinning it round. You know, he was on top form. No one could mess with him in this episode. So, you know, and I love the way he's giving me orders about how much bath water can use, and he's twirling his captain's cane, you know, with his gloves on, you know. He's really gone to his head this time, but hell, this is what he's there to do.
It hasn't. I think he's doing, as I said before, I think he's doing the right thing. He knows exactly what to do. The others are running around in a mad panic. He clearly demonstrates his authority by, one, keeping very calm. Throughout this episode, he is very calm and measured. He's not shouting. The embarrassing things you talked about earlier on with his platoon, he manages to get through quite easily.
Yeah.
And I think this episode, Mannerin is absolutely brilliant in it. He shows all of the correct qualities of leadership, and he's vindicated at the end. And I just think he's a very, very strong, authoritative character. Mannerin almost wants there to be a war that he can actually play a leading and coordinating role in. And his platoon in this episode do look up to him, even if they unite against him towards the end by saying he's gone mad, completely unfairly, in my view.
And it does come from nowhere as well, really. Their journey, because within like 2 minutes, they're all behind him. And then suddenly there's this dissension. It's almost like they ran out of time in this episode. They couldn't quite cram it all in.
No, absolutely.
It does seem to come from nowhere, this sudden thing. Oh, he's he's gone too far. But it's quite a nice little scene with Harold Bennett coming in with Mr. Blewett about his, you know, and just showing the ludicrousy of having to get permission to run a bath. That's a nice little scene and a good way of utilising the character of Mr. Blewett.
Well, I wonder whether or not other characters or residents even of Warmington would have taken the instructions seriously. But you never know, they might have done. I mean, Mannerin was talking about the risk of cholera and therefore you can't actually run a bath without boiling it, but they had no heat to boil. That's their problem. All very funny, but I think mainly said for comic effect. One of the things that I think is absolutely fantastic piece of British humour is that Mannerin leaves the church hall to take over the town hall because he who holds the town hall holds Warmington. And he couldn't do it because it had closed. Therefore, he had to go back at 9 o'clock in the morning when it reopened in order to take it over. And that, for me, is so British.
Yes, yeah.
You know, oh, we can't actually organise this coup because, you know, the post office is closed today.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But I thought that was one of the funniest jokes, really. And it doesn't get a huge laugh, actually, either. But I just think it's really clever humour playing to stereotypes.
Yeah, they've never really had much joy ever over Home Garden breaking into it. In the second episode, they want to break into the museum, don't they? And they can't get in there.
Well, this is it. They have to entice James's father out with liquor, which, of course, Fraser later would have easily been able to do because he could have given him a liquor license, but according to this episode. But I think, fundamentally, that really sums up my thoughts on this episode. I don't want to go into it in too much detail, frankly, because it's the main point I wanted to make was the response demonstrated in the case of an emergency. One emergency being wartime, another kind of scene or perceived emergency, not having enough money to feel part of society. And I think that is a very interesting comparison to draw. It's not frequent that we look at a Dad's Army episode in the light of contemporary events or newsworthy events. And I just wanted to vent a little bit. The very last thing I will say on this is that we never saw Pike get his head out the gate, you know. That plot point or that story point was never resolved. He's left there, poor guy, with his head in the gate as the credits roll.
Yeah, that's the point. I wonder how do you reckon they got him out of it? You can bet if Walker had been there, he'd have got him out. You know, Walker would have been the one to get him out. So they obviously thought, oh, there's no one here who really knows how to sort this.
Well, what goes in must come out. And frankly, when I was a kid, I stuck my head between the banisters we had at home. And it took me an awful long time and our next door neighbour, but it came out eventually. As you can see, it's still joined on. But I think that was the pure comedy element. And of course, you're not really supposed to think, well, what happened? Wilson perhaps sawed through, as he kind of implied he might do later.
I reckon Mrs. Pike just got it with one of her frying pans.
Bashed him
with it. Frank! Get yourself home.
I can't see Mrs. Pike being that prone to violence.
Yeah, you like Mrs. Pike.
Let's move on. Yeah, I do. Okay.
Well, that's it. We hope you've enjoyed our little thoughts on A Man of Action, and maybe you can let us know what you think. Is it a link to modern society and contemporary things going on in our world? Or did you think we were just crazy for making that comparison? Let us know. As usual, it's James at dadsarmypodcast.com or Oliver at dadsarmypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/Oliver Crocker. Yeah, please do get in touch with us about this one. We'd be delighted to read through your thoughts in our next feedback in the next edition of a podcast, which will be a commentary podcast, and we won't be alone for this commentary. So stay tuned, see who our special guest is on the show.
In the meantime, enjoy watching the repeats of Dad's Army on BBC Two. It is still getting a regular run out on Saturday evenings, and the radio shows are going out on whatever is BBC Radio 7 now. Extra 4 Radio, I don't know what it is now. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's on the internet thing, you know. Have a look on BBC iPlayer. That's where you can find the radio episodes. And we'll be back in about a month's time.
Until then, take care, be safe, and good luck.
Bye for now.
Boys, you will stop your little game. We are the boys.
that's it. We hope you've enjoyed our little thoughts on A Man of Action, and maybe you can let us know what you think. Is it a link to modern society and contemporary things going on in our world, or did you think we were just talking, utter bollocks? No.